I'm Echo.
And I'm Ether. Welcome to another Cohere Technologies Deep Dive podcast.
Imagine for a second, right, that you've just upgraded your whole life to a hyper-fast 6G network.
Oh, the absolute dream.
Yeah, exactly. You've got the latest device. You are promised speeds that literally make 5G look like dial-up. Mm. And, you know, you're settling in on a high-speed bullet train. Maybe your phone is connecting to a satellite network miles above you.
Right. Highly mobile, incredibly fast environment.
Right. So you start this critical high-definition holographic call. And then completely out of nowhere, your connection just shatters. I mean, it drops, reconnects, stutters, and then ultimately just fails entirely.
Which is, frankly, incredibly frustrating. Because, you know, we are constantly sold on this promise of 6G, but the physical environments we are trying to push these massive data streams through, they are becoming incredibly hostile to the way our devices actually talk to the network.
Yeah, and that tension, like, between our increasingly extreme physical tech environments and the invisible math that actually keeps us connected, that is the exact foundation for today's deep dive.
It's such a great topic.
It really is.
Yeah.
So we have this fascinating paper on the table today. It's titled A Design Framework That Unifies 6G Modulation Schemes for Double Selectivity.
Oh, quite the mouthful.
Oh, definitely. It was written by researchers Nishant Mehrotra, Sandesh Rao Matu, and Robert Calderbank.
Mm.
And our mission today is to unpack a massive aha moment in telecommunications that they outline here.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal piece of work. It is highly technical, sure, but the implications. They're going to reshape how we build telecommunications from the ground up.
Exactly. Because we are going to explore how these researchers solved a looming 6G crisis, not by, you know, inventing a shiny new piece of hardware or some giant new antenna.
Right, which is usually the go-to solution.
Yeah, but instead they discovered this hidden mathematical master key that unites a whole bunch of competing technologies.
Yeah.
So as you're listening to this, while we will be wading into the mathematical weeds a bit, this is really the story of how the very data keeping your future devices online will dynamically shapeshift.
Just dynamically altering itself to survive chaotic environments. They essentially found unity in chaos.
Unity in chaos, I like that.
Well, I mean, the telecommunications industry was trying to solve this fundamental physics problem by creating a bunch of seemingly unrelated, highly complex solutions.
Yeah.
And this paper just steps back and proves mathematically that these competing solutions are actually the exact same thing in disguise.
Which is wild. But to really appreciate the solution, I think we have to look at the problem first. So why is 6G breaking our current wireless paradigms? The term that keeps popping up in the source material is double selectivity.
Yeah, double selectivity. So to understand that, we have to look at how the shift to 6G fundamentally changes where our networks operate.
Right.
We aren't just dealing with, you know, stationary cell towers on top of office buildings anymore. We are moving toward non-terrestrial networks. So think low Earth orbit satellites, and we are using much, much higher carrier frequencies to handle these massive data payloads.
Okay, so we're dealing with radically faster speeds, but the signals are coming from space or like bouncing off moving targets.
Exactly. And that creates an incredibly complex physical environment for a radio wave. The first half of that double selectivity is something called delay spread.
Delay spread. Okay, break that down for me.
Well, imagine standing in a really large canyon and shouting. You hear an echo, right?
Got it.
That echo is just your voice bouncing off a distant rock wall and arriving at your ear slightly after the original sound.
Right, so the signal takes multiple paths to get to the receiver.
Mm-hmm.
And because those physical paths are all different lengths, the signals arrive at slightly different times.
Exactly. And at the microsecond speeds where we actually process data, those tiny delays cause massive interference. The network just gets completely confused trying to stitch all those little echoes back together.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But see, that's only the first problem. The second half of double selectivity is Doppler spread. So think of an ambulance driving past you.
Like the siren changing pitch.
Yes. As it approaches, the siren sounds really high-pitched, and as it drives away, the pitch drops.
Because the motion of the ambulance is physically compressing or stretching the sound waves.
You've got it. Now apply that exact concept to radio waves. If you are on a high-speed bullet train, or if your signal is coming from a satellite hurtling through orbit at thousands of miles an hour,
the relative motion is changing the frequency.
Exactly. The relative motion between the transmitter and your phone physically changes the frequency of the radio wave.
So if I'm getting this right, the network is basically trying to catch a ball while the entire stadium is moving.
That is a perfect way to put it.
It has to deal with signals bouncing off buildings and arriving late, which is the delay spread, while simultaneously dealing with the frequencies stretching and compressing, because everything is moving so fast, the Doppler spread.
And when you combine those two forces, you get a doubly selective environment. And our legacy standard, the invisible language that runs our current 4G and 5G world, it just falls apart here.
That's OFDM, right? Orthogonal frequency division multiplexing.
That's the one.
Yeah, I always like to picture OFDM as this incredibly reliable, heavy-duty city bus. It's been the backbone of our digital world for years.
A total workhorse.
Right. And it's fantastic for standard urban routes. You put your data on the bus, it drives down a predictable, perfectly paved grid of city streets, and it drops the data off. That's 4G and 5G.
Yeah, very orderly.
But as we move to 6G, it's like we are taking that exact same city bus and trying to drive it off-road through a canyon at Mach 1. It just physically cannot handle the terrain.
It really can't.
But I do want to push back on this a bit, or at least clarify the mechanism here. Is the problem just that the signals get garbled from all the bouncing? Or is the network fundamentally losing track of where the data actually is?
It's the loss of tracking that really kills the connection. Mm. Because with OFDM, the network relies on a very rigid, literal grid of time and frequency.
Like the city streets in the analogy.
Yeah, right. Exactly like the streets. If the Doppler effect shifts the frequency too much, the data physically moves off the grid the receiver is looking at. And if the delay spread stretches the timing too much, the data bleeds over into the next grid square.
Oh, I see.
So the data hasn't just gotten garbled, right? It has leaked out of its assigned container, and that causes this massive destructive interference with all the surrounding data.
So the old standard is fundamentally incompatible with the new physics of 6G.
Totally incompatible.
Naturally, though, because telecommunications is a massive multi-billion dollar industry, engineers didn't just sit still and accept defeat. When OFDM started failing in these 6G simulations, they started inventing new things.
Oh, it became a complete wild west of new standards. Everyone was racing to invent the perfect 6G modulation scheme that could somehow miraculously survive this double selectivity.
Yeah, looking at the paper, this is where we really get a true alphabet soup of acronyms. You had researchers proposing a scheme called ZAC-OTFS and another one called ODDM.
Right, and those two supposedly operate in the delay Doppler domain.
Exactly. And then another group proposed AFDM, which modulates information in something called the chirp domain. And yet another group came up with OTSM, which operates in the time sequency domain. I mean, it sounds like they are speaking completely different languages. What does chirp domain even mean?
I know, the terminology gets dense really quickly.
Yeah.
But domains are basically just different ways engineers chose to slice up the physics of a radio wave to hide the data.
Okay, slice up the physics how?
So one group thought, hey, let's map the data to frequency sweeps, and that's a chirp. Another thought, let's map the data to the specific ordering of pulses, and that's time sequencing.
So you basically had different teams publishing all these different papers claiming their specific slicing method was the definitive way to solve the 6G problem.
Exactly. Everyone thought they had the silver bullet.
But here is where the core of this research paper absolutely flipped the script. These researchers, Mehrotra, Mathew, and Calderbank, they didn't invent another acronym to throw onto the pile.
No, they didn't.
They mathematically proved that all of these seemingly different solutions, whether you are slicing by chirps or sequency or delay Doppler, are actually the exact same thing.
It is a brilliant piece of mathematical synthesis, honestly. They proved that ZOC, OTFS, ODDM, AFDM, and OTSM are all just different instances of a single unified family of waveforms.
And in the paper, they represent this overarching family with the Greek letter psi, right?
That's right, the psi family.
Okay, I am going to need some help visualizing this, though, because the paper defines this psi family as complex Hadamard-modulated pulse trains. Now, if I remember my high school math, a matrix is just a grid of numbers, like a spreadsheet.
Basically, yeah.
So how does applying a spreadsheet of numbers physically change a radio wave so drastically that engineers thought they were inventing entirely new technologies?
Okay, let's strip away the jargon and break down the actual mechanism. Think of a pulse train as your raw material. It's just a simple baseline rhythm of digital pulses.
Okay, got it.
But by itself, it's not robust enough to carry complex data through a chaotic environment. You have to pass it through a mathematical filter to transform it. And that filter is the complex Hadamard matrix.
Okay, so if the pulse train is our raw material, let's say it's a beam of pure white light. then the Hadamard matrix acts like a prism that we shoot the light through.
Oh, that's a great way to look at it. Yes.
Yeah.
Because when you shoot the white light into the prism, the math shatters it into a very specific, perfectly spaced spectrum of colors.
Right.
And the defining feature of a complex Hadamard matrix is that its rows and columns are perfectly mutually orthogonal.
Okay, wait, orthogonal? That essentially means those individual colors or data streams exist in entirely separate lanes that can never intersect or interfere with each other, no matter how chaotic the traffic gets.
Exactly. They are mathematically blind to each other. They operate on completely independent planes. And what the paper proves is that if you take your white light pulse train and you shoot it through one specifically shaped prism, say a discrete Fourier transform matrix, wow, the resulting rainbow of data is ZAC-OTFS.
Oh, wow.
And if you take that exact same white light pulse train, but you shoot it through a slightly differently shaped prism, like a Walsh matrix, you get OTSM.
So by just rotating the prism or just swapping out that one variable mathematical matrix, you generate all these completely different technologies that researchers thought were separate inventions.
Yep. They found the underlying geometry that controls all of these signals. To the receiver on the other end, a chirp domain signal and a time sequencing domain signal look totally different. But the engineers finally realized the light source and the prism mechanism are identical.
That is incredible. It turns a chaotic, hyper-competitive academic Wild West into a beautifully unified theory.
It really is elegant.
But, it makes sense on paper. But mathematically shattering the light into perfect non-interfering lanes doesn't mean much if it doesn't actually survive the physical chaos we talked about earlier.
Right. It still has to work in the real world. Exactly. Which brings us to what the paper calls the superpowers of this new psi family. How does this math actually obliterate the old OFDM standard in these doubly selective environments?
Well, the paper highlights two major properties shared by every single waveform in this family: non-selectivity and predictability.
Okay, let's look at non-selectivity first, which they define as no symbol fading.
Right. To prove this, they ran a simulation using a standardized six-path vehicular aid channel model.
And to ground this for you listening, if you're sitting on that 300-mile-per-hour bullet train trying to make a call, this six-path vehicular aid model is exactly the chaotic, echoing physical reality outside your window.
Yep, your signal is pinging off a tunnel wall, a passing train, a mountain, and it's all arriving at different times and getting stretched by the speed.
And if you look at the chart data they provided, I think it's in figure 3A of the paper, they plot the received energy per carrier.
Yeah, which is basically a visual representation of how much data power actually makes it through that chaotic canyon to the receiver.
The visual difference is honestly striking. The line for the legacy standard, our old reliable city bus OFDM, is a mess. I mean, it looks like a jagged mountain range, just wildly fluctuating up and down.
Right, which means some data is coming in loud and clear at the peaks, but other data is plunging into deep valleys where the energy just drops off a cliff.
And those valleys represent the symbol fading, right?
Exactly. The data in those carriers is getting completely wiped out by the destructive interference of the echoes and the Doppler shifts. The receiver simply cannot hear the signal over the noise of the environment.
But then you look at the lines for ZAC-OTFS, ODDM, AFDM, and OTSM, the entire unified psi family.
And what do they look like?
They're perfectly flat. It's just a single straight horizontal line across the entire chart. There are no valleys at all.
Zero fading.
No data gets lost to fading. How does the matrix actually achieve that, though?
Because of the way the Hadamard matrix, your prism, distributes the data, the information is spread across the entire channel simultaneously. It doesn't put all its eggs in a single fragile frequency basket like the old OFDM grid.
Oh, I see.
The entire waveform absorbs the distortion of the environment uniformly. So even if the channel is violently chaotic, the received energy remains perfectly stable.
Okay, so non-selectivity keeps the signal from fading out. The data physically survives the trip. But a strong signal is completely useless if the receiver on the other end has no idea how to untangle it from the chaos.
That is the second major hurdle, yes. The mapping problem.
Which brings us to predictability. In traditional networks, the receiver has to constantly map the physical environment to understand how the channel is distorting the signal, right?
Yeah. And to do this, the transmitter sends pilots, which are just known test signals, so the receiver can calculate the shape of the distortion and reverse engineer the data.
But in a 6G environment, where the channel is changing incredibly fast because of Doppler shifts.
Yeah.
I mean, you would have to send a massive amount of these test signals just to keep up with the changing environment.
Exactly. It creates enormous overhead. You spend so much bandwidth just figuring out the shape of the room that you have very little bandwidth left for the actual data you're trying to send.
Right.
But what this paper proves is that for all modulation schemes in the Psi family, channel estimation requires incredibly low overhead. Under the right conditions, a single pilot transmission perfectly predicts the entire channel behavior.
Just one.
Just one.
I want to try an analogy here because the mechanism behind this predictability is fascinating. Using the old method in a chaotic environment is like having to walk around a pitch black room, right? Yeah. And you have to physically touch every single inch of every wall, every piece of furniture, just to map out where things are.
Oh, it's a good comparison.
It takes forever. It's incredibly inefficient. And by the time you finish mapping the room, the furniture might have moved because you're on a train.
And that high overhead makes it practically impossible to maintain a high-speed connection.
But with this new Psi family, because of those underlying orthogonal mathematical properties, it's like standing in the middle of that dark room and dropping one single acoustic pin on the floor.
Just one pin drop.
Right. And from the echo of that one pin drop, you instantly get a perfect high-resolution 3D map of the entire space. Mm-hmm. You map the chaos with one tiny measurement.
And the math in the paper backs that analogy up beautifully. They prove this in Lemma 1, focusing on the self-ambiguity of the waveform.
Okay, what does that mean?
They show it has only one non-zero value at the origin point within a certain region. Now, without getting bogged down in the equations, what that basically means is the echo of the pilot signal, your pin drop has absolutely zero mathematical blurring.
Oh, wow.
The receiver hears a perfectly crisp echo and can deduce the entire channel with absolute precision.
And when you combine those two superpowers, the non-selectivity meaning the signal doesn't fade, and the predictability meaning the network instantly maps the chaos without wasting bandwidth, you get what they call full diversity.
Yes, full diversity. In telecommunications, diversity essentially refers to the ultimate reliability of the system.
Right.
The researchers ran tests on the bit error rate, or BER, and as the signal power increased, the error rate for every single one of these new waveforms dropped uniformly, virtually eliminating data errors.
And the OFDM standard.
Oh, it crashed. Its error rate stalled out incredibly early because it just couldn't adapt to the environment.
So we basically watched the city bus break an axle in the canyon while these new mathematical off-road vehicles just glided over the rocks.
Exactly.
But, you know, this leads me to a really practical question. If we have proven that all these waveforms, SAC-OTFS, AFDM, OTSM, perform equally well in terms of reliability, why did the paper even bother unifying them?
What do you mean?
Well, why not just pick the single best one, declare it the winner of 6G, and tell the industry to throw the rest away?
Because there is no single best waveform for every piece of hardware. And this is perhaps the most exciting real-world application of this entire framework.
Okay.
Because they belong to the same mathematical family, a single network transmitter does not have to choose just one. It can generate multiple different waveforms at the exact same time. The authors call this multiplexing.
Wait, really? The same physical antenna can broadcast different mathematical flavors simultaneously?
Yes, through a common transceiver architecture. Think back to our prism analogy.
Right, the white light in the prism.
Because the underlying light source, the pulse train, is exactly the same, the cell tower hardware can essentially swap out the prisms on the fly. It mixes and matches the matrices within the same transmission frame.
But why go through the trouble of swapping the prisms at all?
Because different real-world situations place different demands on the physical hardware of your device. For example, ZOC-OTFS is incredibly robust for multi-user setups, making it great for handling lots of connections.
Okay, that makes sense.
But it requires a lot of power from the amplifier. AFDM, on the other hand, which operates in the chirp domain, has what engineers call a lower peak-to-average power ratio, or PPR.
Meaning it requires significantly less energy from the device that's transmitting it.
Exactly. So AFDM is much better for a single-user scenario where battery life, or maybe the cost of the amplifier, is a major constraint.
Oh, man. So if you're holding a new 6G device a few years from now, this mix-and-match feature sounds like it enables true heterogeneous service.
It absolutely does.
Means the cell tower you are connected to can dynamically hand out bespoke, custom-tailored signals based on exactly what you were doing and what device you were using.
Simultaneously. I mean, if you are on that high-speed bullet train zooming across the country, your phone might be negotiating with the tower using ZOC-OTFS.
Because you're moving fast and sharing the network with hundreds of other people on the train.
Right. The network gives you the mathematical flavor best suited for multi-user chaos.
And at the exact same moment, from the exact same tower, someone sitting completely still on a park bench, just using a tiny, low-power smartwatch to stream audio, they might be receiving an AFDM signal.
Yes. The tower seamlessly multiplexes these waveforms because, deep down in the code, they're all part of the same underlying Psi family. The industry doesn't have to compromise on hardware limitations anymore.
They solve the hardware constraints by shifting the complexity into this elegant mathematical framework.
They really did.
Let's bring this all together.
Yeah.
We started with a looming technical bottleneck, right? The absolute chaos of double selectivity in 6G.
High frequencies, satellite networks, bullet trains.
Yeah. All creating massive delay and Doppler spreads that were fundamentally breaking our legacy grid systems.
And we had an industry just throwing everything at the wall, creating a dozen different modulation schemes in different domains, arguing over which slicing method was best.
But Marotra, Matu, and Calderbank looked deeper. They bypassed the physical arguments and looked into the underlying geometry, finding total unity.
It's brilliant.
By establishing the overarching family of complex Hadamard modulated pulse trains, they proved that all these competing solutions were driven by the exact same mechanism.
And more importantly, they proved that this mathematical master key guarantees the signal won't fade and perfectly maps the environment.
It really is a masterclass in how finding the right structural framework simplifies something that seems, frankly, physically impossible on the surface.
It completely changes everything about how we design networks moving forward.
It does. But as we wrap up this deep dive, it leaves me with a lingering thought for you to ponder. We just spent this entire time talking about how future communication signals will dynamically shapeshift, using unified math to perfectly counter a chaotic physical environment.
Yeah, the invisible signals are literally adapting to overcome the physical constraints of the real world.
Exactly. So what other physical limitations in our everyday technology are just waiting for the right mathematical translation to disappear entirely?
I mean, we tend to view physical constraints like heat or battery size or bandwidth as absolute unbreakable boundaries.
Right. But could the hardware limitations of tomorrow just be software problems we simply haven't found the math for yet? Next time your connection drops, just remember, the math to fix it is already out there, just waiting for the right prism.